Okay, folks, I thought we'd look at a different aspect of meditation today. I thought we'd approach contemplation. A lot of the meditation that we practice is experience-based, so we just go for pure experience. But every now and then, meditation requires us to engage the creative side of our mind, if you like, thinking. Which is quite radical, isn't it? Because often I'll say, let go of thought, don't think about things. But here we're actually using thinking, but probably not in the way we usually do when we're doing our tax return or whatever. It's a very different way. And we have to be in the right mind to contemplate. And there's a great story, it's a classic Zen story, and it gets quoted all over the place. It's about the master who's filling the student's teacup, and the master keeps pouring, and pretty soon the tea overflows. But he just keeps pouring, and the student cries out to him to stop. And the master explains to the student that the student first needs to empty his cup. This is the point he's trying to put across. So I'll come back to that towards the end, and you'll see why I quoted it. So a Buddhist practice is not dogmatic in its approach. It has lots of things that kind of sit in the background that we challenge with understanding. So a classic example that people often come to that feel challenged by with Buddhist practice is the concept of rebirth. It is quite a topic, that, and it gets hotly debated, and people try and understand it. So that's one area that's quite an interesting area. And the other area that we touched on last week is the cosmology side of Buddhist practice, particularly Tibetan Buddhist cosmology, and everything it carries with it in terms of the different realms that us sentient beings can occupy. But as a practicing Buddhist, the key word here is we're taught to practice, not to learn. And it's interesting, I think, this. Although we've got the guidance of the Pali Canon sitting there, and it's full of these what are called sutras, which are the Buddhist sayings. They're there to guide us. But we don't learn them by rote. Some people do, but that's not what the practice is about. We practice with their guidance. So I was thinking about this one, trying to come up with an analogy. Who's built an IKEA wardrobe? Anybody? Yeah. Actually, IKEA wardrobes are very good. The instructions are brilliant. However, there was some years ago, there was a company called MFI. You must remember them. So the first wardrobe I ever built was an MFI wardrobe. The instructions were rubbish, I've got to say. So I had to practice. It was the only way to build this wardrobe. So I'd kick off and build part of the wardrobe, working my way as best as I could through the instructions, trying to interpret what the hell they meant. And there were lots of retries and a few big aha moments along the way when the penny dropped on what these instructions were actually trying to tell me. And then you step forward a little and build the next bit. For me, actually, Buddhist practice feels like this, in a nutshell. The instructions are a little vague, they're less than obvious and obscure, perhaps. Don't entirely fit into the context of my modern world. But in places, you get very, very detailed instruction. just like those MFI details. So the sutras, for example, tell us about the Four Noble Truths, and they explain that life is suffering. That suffering and the understanding of what leads us to suffering, that knowledge and that experience actually moves us towards true understanding and potentially enlightenment. Now, I think in ancient India, life probably was a great deal harder. Food was scarce and the living conditions were poor. Therefore, I think suffering was probably more obvious to people. In our modern world, with all our wealth, the newcomer to Buddhism finds it quite difficult to see the suffering, particularly if they come from privileged backgrounds. So it's less than obvious. So in that respect, the Four Noble Truths can be quite difficult to grasp, and they're a bit like the vague areas of the MFI wardrobe instruction. But then other sutras, such as the Satipatthana Sutra, this goes into a great deal of detail about mindfulness and the practice of meditation. So sections actually carry a lot of detail. Now, whether this is because it actually took 400 years before the Buddha's words were written down, so some of it was lost, some of it was vague, whereas some of the monks had clear recollections. Who knows? It's a long time ago. So the approach that I think I found very useful is contemplation. So this is a little different to the way we usually approach teachings and religious ideas, if you like, and instruction. So we can actually apply creative thought to what the sutra is telling us. We do, after all, have a tool for that. Here it is. A very useful tool. But we don't approach it in that traditional academic way. So we're not going to learn the sutras off by heart. I mean, it's quite interesting when that happens. So we spend hours and hours perhaps studying a sutra, learning it by rote, off by heart, and then we put it to one side and we sit down with the family for dinner and we fall out with them. hasn't exactly taken us forward, knowing it by rote. So instead, what I recommend is combining this idea of feeling with contemplative practice. So we build in experience. When I built that wardrobe, even if I'd learnt those instructions off by heart, it wouldn't have allowed me to finish the wardrobe any quicker. In fact, if I'd have stuck to the instructions religiously, well, I don't think I'd have ended up with a wardrobe. I think I'd have had a pile of wood. Well, MDF, actually. Misshapen MDF. It would have been very interesting. And actually, I think the same applies here. We take the texts and actually we see how they apply to our lives. That's the important thing. Things have moved on in the last 2,500 years. We live in a very different world. But the text, through contemplation, can come through to us. We can understand something about the end product, even though the description of the end product, actually, the Buddha religiously avoided being drawn on. His words on that subject were quite interesting when people pushed him and said, what is enlightenment like, or what is life after death like? He would just simply say, well, actually, knowing the answer to that is not going to take you forward in your practice. So practice now. Don't think about what's coming in the future. Some of the concepts are very difficult that I mentioned earlier. Tibetan cosmology is really interesting. We don't, however, have to actually believe that these realms exist on a universal scale. We can equate them to our life. We can even look at these different realms and see them appear in different people. And actually, if you look at them, you can even see them appear in yourself several times a day. And they are the realm of the gods, the demigods, the human, animals, hungry ghosts, and hell. And we can pass through these realms many times a day.
Hell.
And in these different realms, the human realm is considered the most likely place where we can actually enter enlightenment. In the other realms, a mindful existence is very, very difficult. So actually, we can weave into that universal cosmology idea, if you like, another sutra. And we can see how this one can transpire in our daily lives. And the one I picked here was the Bahia Sutra. And here we have a very clear description of using our pure senses to stay fully present. We've done this one, this practice, many times in the Top Studio. We're going to do it again today. Just paying passive attention to our pure senses. So in the Buddha tells Bahia in the sutra, the seen will be merely seen, the heard will be merely heard, the sensed will be merely sensed, etc. And of course, as practicing people, we recognize this as remaining mindful and fully present. And essentially, we're attempting to not let the ego invade our experience, i.e. presenting that veil of ourselves instead of what is seen. Here we can contemplate how this sutra comes into our daily lives. So here we are, sitting squarely in the human realm. We're feeling calm and mindful. We finish our practice and head out to our car, where we find the tyres have been slashed. Now our contemplation can then consider how we react to this. Certainly something more than just seeing and merely seeing will probably occur. But that's okay. That's okay. Because the sutra expresses that the cognized will be merely cognized. Of course, we feel anger bubble up, inevitably. But if we actually contemplate on this, we can actually see that through practice, we can accept and understand the anger and not feel guilty about it later. Because that's just another thing. Provided we do actually see the anger, feel it, notice it, accept it, and don't allow it to control us. Anger, very human emotion. Of course we have it. But it's about just seeing it. We learn through mindfulness and contemplation. Otherwise, we'll certainly move away from the human realm and slip into one of the others in that little moment. So my advice here, don't get hung up on what you believe in. When you read the sutras, when you read the cosmology and everything that's behind Buddhist practice, think about what you can reflect on. See how it actually comes into your own life. Even difficult concepts like rebirth and the absence of self, we can bring into our own existence That sounds a bit of a contradiction, doesn't it? We don't have to see them as physical truths. And in this way, we empty our cup. Or better still, we see that it was never full in the first place. The stuff we thought was in the cup isn't really there. But in order to actually lead a contemplative approach to life in this way, we need a settled mind. We do need that. The more settled and calm the mind is, the more space for that acceptance and understanding. If we have that calm and settled mind, we won't be so judgmental on ourselves, and we won't be so judgmental on the words that we're reading in the sutras. We won't be so dismissive. And we won't slip away from our awareness and get caught into the loop of our emotions and their triggered actions. When something doesn't quite resonate with us, we can react with aversion and push it away. We might be missing out on something there. So better to go in and see what's going on. So the meditation we're going to do today, we're going to empty our cup. So we're going to use the mindfulness of breathing to really concentrate, first of all, establish that nice, settled presence of mind. At this point, do let go of thoughts. Just let go of them. And use that little phrase that my wise father once said to me about the rain, when I was a kid and it was raining outside and I didn't want to go outside. And he said, it's dry between the raindrops. At the time, that just wound me up something rotten. But actually, it was really wise because, of course, yes, we have thoughts and they kind of get in the way. But what's between the thoughts? Go into that space. So when you're meditating and you're using the breath to calm yourself down, if thoughts are getting in the way, try and see what's between them. Try and find that space. When you do that, the thoughts tend to evaporate like gossamer. You try and reach out for them, they go. So we're going to go through that. Then we're going to use and experience the essence of this Bahia Sutra through passive listening and the sound of silence. Okay. So we'll sit. I'll sound the gong, listen to the gong, and keep listening to it. And eventually, obviously, the sound will go, and something will replace it. There will be other sounds. There'll be sounds quite close and far away. But there's something sitting behind, and it's always there. And that's what we're going to focus on. If you find it difficult to find that sound of silence, just come back to the breath for a short while. And focus on that, and then let it go again. The more you drop into that meditative state, the more the sound of silence comes through. And when you hear it, it's often a big old shock, because lots of us have heard it all the time. And it's sitting behind there. Practically, it sounds a bit like white noise. But it doesn't have a sound that seems to come from outside of the head. When you hear it, it seems to come from inside your head. It's known in many cultures. The nada sound is what it's called in South America. So see if you can pick it up. It's a great meditation subject. Okay. Anybody suffer with tinnitus? Yes. It's especially challenging for you. Maybe go into the tinnitus. Yeah.
I listen to the rhythm of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good meditation subject. So, settling down. Just relax into the posture. Experiencing the space around us. And awareness of friends sitting with you. Let your gaze rest just slightly below the horizon, as if you're looking slightly down. We're going to start with a body scan. Take your minds down into your feet. Feeling as much as you can. Tiny little sparks of energy across the sole, up over the heel, and on up through the ankle bones. Into the shins and the calf muscles, and any tension, let it go. Let it melt out. Work up into the knees. As you travel, notice that your experience of the body, it's not a constant thing. It's tiny little flashes and sparks of energy moving and changing all the time. Nothing static. Work up along the thighs and the hamstrings. And up into the sitting bones, sinking into the seat. Sinking and settling. Really feeling the ground supporting you, nice and safe. Let the head float up a little. Easing out the spine. As you do this, feel a sense of freshness come into the mind. Take your awareness down into the stomach and the heart area. Really feel what's going on here. The same level of attention you pay to your feet, pay to the stomach and the heart. What can you feel? What emotions are going on? And we come up into the shoulders and let tension melt out of them. And then take your awareness down your arms and down into the hands and the fingers. Come back up to the head and explore your scalp for whatever you can find. Soften the face. Gentle, compassionate gaze behind the eyes. Bring all of these sensations together, sitting in this space with friends. Mindfulness of breathing. Gently bring your awareness to the breath. Wherever you most feel it. as you breathe, on each out-breath, let the word calm echo in the mind and settle in the body. Just the breath. Calm. Fully present, this breath is the only one that matters. Go into it. Calm. Thank you. I'm going to ring the bell. Go into the sound, listen to the sound, and keep listening to it. And let the sound of silence come through. concentration. We bring our awareness back into the room, feeling our bodies, the ground underneath us, and friends sitting with us. And we can offer ourselves a sense of intent or resolution to take our practice out into the world, to stay mindful, fully present, as often as we can. Like ripples in a pond, we make a difference. Om Mani Padme Hum.